You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friends. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, August 31st. Last day, I guess, of what they call meteorological summer. We'll be heading in tomorrow into the meteorological fall. I just don't think anybody has told the local temperatures that. Summer saving all its heat till the backstretch run. But God is good, and it's good to be with you this morning. Next hour, we'll be talking to Chelsea Zimmerman. Chelsea, who's a monthly guest. Chelsea, who holds forth at the blog ReflectionsOfAParalytic.com. Chelsea, who suffered a spinal cord injury late in her high school years and now over a decade later, continues to reflect and write not only on her own experience dealing with paralysis in her life and disability, but also deals a lot with the dignity of the human person, Catholic moral teaching on bioethics and the like. And she's also the editor-in-chief at CatholicLane.com. And Chelsea, graciously with us every month from beautiful Pensacola, Florida. And we'll be talking today about the upcoming Rio Paralympics. Some pretty cool video. I'll post a link to it eventually here on the show's Facebook page. But you can look it up as well on YouTube if you go to Rio Paralympics. It's pretty amazing, the different sporting achievements of folks who do not let disability get in the way of their ability, let's put it that way. But we'll be talking about some other things sort of in light of that as well. What Chelsea sees is almost two equal and opposite errors in the way that we view persons or treat persons with disability. One is in a very condescending sort of way, not expecting very much, a condescending affirmation if they accomplish anything at all. Almost talking to you as well, not just down in a geographic sense, let's say you're in a wheelchair, but talking as though somehow you have some sort of intellectual impairment as well. I mean, there's all kind of different ways that we can be condescending and rather insulting to those who are dealing with a disability. On the other side, she says, there's the problem of almost a false idolization, romanticization of the person dealing with a disability, that they don't have some of the same vices as well and human struggles as the next person. So we'll wade through all that together with Chelsea Zimmerman in the second hour with her unique and very needed perspective. We'll also talk a little bit, if we have time, about the upcoming canonization of Blessed Mother Teresa, soon to be Saint Mother Teresa, which is happening this Sunday in Rome. Should be a great event. Tomorrow, as I said, I'll have John Allen and Inez San Martin on live from the Eternal City. We'll have them both on for two segments. They both, of course, John Allen, the editor with Crux Now, and Inez San Martin, really, besides John Allen, the top writer with that web resource. They are in Rome covering the canonization, so I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about in that regard. Some other topics we'll get into today are a quote and a list that bothered me. I meant to get into this quote yesterday, but ran out of time. So we'll get into a quote and a list that bother me, the gospel and our expectations, and Pope Francis putting a finger on the ecological crisis. We'll also spin the Dollar Catechism wheel. We'll look back in history and give out our What Were You Thinking Awards. All that and more coming up on the program today. Alex standing by, ably running the board and ready to take your calls if you want to chime in on the program. 573-4BREAD-4 is the number. 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. I've already been in email conversation this morning with the communications director for the Cardinal Archbishop of Hong Kong, Cardinal Tong, there. As I told you yesterday, I'm really wanting to interview him. not just because he's a cardinal of the church, which would be wonderful, but as the Archbishop of Hong Kong, I've been reading some lately about the relationship between the Vatican and China, and the difficulties there that the Catholic Church has had to endure because of the really leeriness, I would say, of the communist government there over the decades, leeriness of foreign influences. I'm kind of making air quotes there on the church. Now, this is not that uncommon throughout history, in which countries, particularly those, I think, in the Far East, Asian countries have sort of gotten the whole idea of Christianity and Western imperialism all mixed up together. I'm not even saying that there haven't been occasions, perhaps, where that conflation has been justified. But I think that's been part of the problem, as well as, I think, general communist paranoia about the influence of religious faith when they are an officially atheistic regime. Meanwhile, Christianity in China continues to grow, and within 15 years, some speculate it could be the most populous Christian nation in the world, which is amazing in and of itself. So I was really hoping to talk to Cardinal Tong. He's getting ready to go to Rome for the canonization of Mother Teresa and the celebration of his 50th ordination. But I've had an interesting back and forth with the communications director. Because here's the situation in China, and then we'll move on from this. But, you know, there's so much happening in the world. This is one reason why it's not easy being the Pope, as we talked about yesterday. You basically have three groups of bishops, of Catholic bishops in China. You've got those who are approved by the government, but not approved by Rome. Right? They have been illicitly ordained as bishops because the government approves them, because they are loyal to the government's agenda. On the other hand, you have those bishops who are approved by Rome, but not approved by Beijing. And those bishops are forced to either go underground, to have underground churches, underground congregations, and so forth. Or some of those are allegedly in prison. And then you've got bishops who are both approved by the Vatican and approved by Beijing. And so the move is, let's get to a place where you don't have two parallel churches, the Chinese Patriotic Catholic Church and the underground church. Let's bring together the church in China at a time where Christianity is really growing. But there's a lot of problems with that, of course, and it's in many ways a no-win situation in terms of Vatican diplomacy. It's not probably dissimilar to the criticism that Richard Nixon received back in the early 70s when he tried to, and did, open the door to relations with China. So anyway, hopefully we'll be able to get Cardinal Tong. I'll keep you posted on that for sure, because that would be, I think, a really cool interview. Looking at the readings for today, for Wednesday, August 31st, continuing in St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians. He deals fairly tenderly with it, but very frankly. You know, we talked about the whole issue a couple of days ago about spiritual pen pals and how Thomas Merton, the Trappist monk and priest, and Evelyn Waugh, the sort of curmudgeonly British author, had this pen pal correspondence relationship, which wasn't simply filled with platitudes and kind expressions. It was, they each challenged each other. Waugh for Merton's literary excesses, and Merton for Waugh's appetital, what's the word I'm looking for? His excesses of drink and food, let's say, and luxury. So it was an honest sort of friendship. St. Paul's correspondence with the people of Corinth, of course, we don't have the letters coming back the other way. Surely there were some, but we do have at least two examples of St. Paul's correspondence to this fledgling Christian community at Corinth. Now, as I said, Corinth should be an antidote to any romanticization of the bliss and piety of the early church, because one of the things St. Paul tackles in this particular chapter, 1 Corinthians 3, and keep in mind, all these chapter divisions are helpful, but ultimately artificial. They were not part of the original text. But St. Paul writes, "Brothers and sisters, I could not talk to you as spiritual people, but as fleshly people, as infants in Christ. I fed you milk, not solid food, because you were unable to take it." So a couple things. I mean, St. Paul's honest with them, right? I mean, and this is sort of a catechetical principle, catechesis, about teaching, about echoing. You do have to know your audience. You can't get too far ahead of your people. Sometimes I think we make that mistake in catechesis. We can make the mistake of assuming and teaching the faith that people are at a more mature place than they are. And when that happens, it really is, it's not going to be fruitful, because we can only receive really a little bit more than where we currently stand. "I fed you milk, not solid food, because you were unable to take it." Then he goes on to say, "because you're still of the flesh." What's the evidence that they're still of the flesh? He says, "while there is jealousy and rivalry among you, are you not of the flesh, walking of the manner of man?" Evidently, there were different schools of thought in Corinth. Those who were loyal to St. Paul, those who were loyal to Apollos, who was a great teacher of the faith as well. It probably not dissimilar to those who, even contemporary Catholics, who say, "well, I'm a St. John Paul II man myself," or, "I consider myself a Benedict Catholic," or, "you know what, I'm partial to Francis." St. Paul says, you know, "neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, only God who causes the growth." We've got some growing up to do ourselves. We'll be back with more on the other side of the break. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour. You are back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Want to learn more about Breadbox Media? Simply go to breadboxmedia.com and you can check it all out. The podcasting, the live streaming, the app for your digital device, as well as all of our various programs. All kind of a chuckle there because we have so many different personalities on here. You've got Mark Shea's wit. You've got you've got the Outside the Walls program with Timothy Putnam on the weekends. You've got the Catholic Foodie to listen to. You've got Dr. Michelle Fiorella. You have got Leo Brown, of course, with his Almost Hour during the day. Just a whole lot of different stuff that you can listen to, each with their own different personality and take on them. You've got Andrew Whaley with his Counterposition. Andrew Whaley is a guy, you listen to him and you'll say, man, what an interesting mind. He's all over the place and all kind of different topics, and fascinating. Spends a lot of time at the coffee bar where he serves up hot Java. So that's all good stuff. But you can check it all out. You can listen to podcasts through iTunes, Google Play, or Podbean for the shows that you haven't been able to catch. Really good. And like I said, you can download the app, and we're working on specific apps for parishes so that you can have same programming for your parish, but your commercial breaks full of your own advertisers and announcements and all the rest, sort of a communications hub. You can also become a friend of your favorite show. And I encourage you, if you enjoy this show, you want to support it, become a friend of this show, receive access to exclusive online content. 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to chime in, be on the program today. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can call or text that number. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response or thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Today, the birthday of Maria Montessori, the Italian physician and educator who was best known really for her approach and philosophy of education. In fact, the philosophy of education that bears her name, in which I think the quote that I posted with the question of the day, I'm assuming this is attributed to her. I mean, it's a meme online. How could it not be, right? Every quote you see online is true. That's what Abe Lincoln said anyway. But Maria Montessori's philosophy of education, basically that, you know, the goal of education is to draw out the best in the student. Let me see if I can find the exact quote here from Mrs. Montessori. There's actually a Montessori school right across from our beautiful studios here. Here we go. Maria Montessori, to stimulate life, leaving it free, however, to unfold itself, that is the first duty of the educator. So none of our children have been in Montessori schools, but I'm assuming that the reflection of a Montessori school is less structured, more creative. That would be my guess. But my question of the day relates to that, and that is, who's the best elementary school teacher that you have encountered, whether as a student yourself, going way back to your elementary school days, or whether it was for one of your children? So who's the best elementary school teacher you've known? And by best, I mean most effective, most memorable, so forth. The best elementary school teacher as a student or as a parent, and why? This one's a little bit hard for me to answer from the perspective of a parent, because I think only one, just about all of our children, we homeschooled all the way through the elementary school years and then entered them into Catholic schools as they got older and to the degree that we could afford it. But my memories of, I can still remember a little vaguely, I can remember my kindergarten teachers, Miss Rose and Miss Helpenstein, from the little Christian church daycare or kindergarten class that I went to. I can remember my first grade teacher vaguely because I crushed on her pretty hard, Miss Helsley. I think at the time she was a young woman. I was a little six-year-old boy. I'm sure probably maybe she had nice perfume. Who knows? First grade, I had a crush on my first grade teacher. My fourth grade teacher, now interestingly enough, was a woman by the name of Mrs. Featherston. Now, Sarah on Facebook actually responded to this. Now, Sarah also grew up here in Lexington, Kentucky, where we broadcast from. She mentioned Mrs. Featherston, who taught fourth grade at another elementary school in Lexington. And I'm wondering, because Sarah's a few years younger than me, with whether Mrs. Featherston left, perhaps, and went to teach at Glendover School. If it's the same Mrs. Featherston, because Sarah listed her as her favorite, she said she connected with me and she taught well, plus she had horses. I need to clarify this because if it's the same Mrs. Featherston, she connected with me as well in fourth grade in my little school. She connected with me with her big wooden paddle. I think she paddled me at least three times that year in front of the whole class. And I want you to know that I did not deserve it. It was an injustice, I'm sure you believe. Diane commenting on Facebook says, Brenda McCray, third grade. Lexington, Kentucky now. Growing up, Margaret Mulqueen, kindergarten teacher in Astoria, New York. Because of the way each have used, she said, their God-given talents, and because each one of them welcomed me into their classrooms to use mine. So if you want to chime in on that question, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. I saw some bad news come across the wire yesterday. Turns in the NFL, we're still, a week and a half away from opening. Actually, probably a week from tomorrow. Usually, I think, the Thursday night before Sunday. Don't the last year's Super Bowl teams typically play? I'm not sure if that's the case or not. Do you know, Alex? Yes, they do. So it'll be Broncos-Panthers a week from tomorrow night. Is that at Denver? Yes, okay. So Denver, I'm not sure, do we know who Denver's quarterback is yet? I'll have to ask him a minute. I can't hear him through the glass. It's certainly not going to be Peyton Manning, of course. So, yeah, I'm sure Carolina is going to be looking for a little redemption in that game. But anyway, the news that came across the wire yesterday was Vikings quarterback Teddy Bridgewater had a freak non-contact injury, bad knee injury, where he dislocated his knee and tore his ACL and effectively done for the season. And evidently, there's some question about when he'll be ready even for next season. Now, Teddy Bridgewater played his college football at the University of Louisville, which, as you know, no love is lost between Kentucky football fans or basketball fans like myself and that other school up the interstate. However, for some reason, I've always kind of liked Teddy Bridgewater. I saw him interviewed a few times, even after his several victories over my Wildcats. Always seemed like a class young man to me, and I liked his game, and you know, I have no ill will for the Vikings. I feel great sympathy, actually, for Vikings fans. Of course, they had their four lost Super Bowls there in about the first, oh, whatever it was, the first 12 years of Super Bowls, 11 years. Lost four out of the first 11. Really, the first Super Bowl I watched, they were shellacked by the Oakland Raiders and Fred Biletnikoff and Ken Stabler. I watched that game when I was just a kid. And I've always felt a bit bad for Vikings fans because, they had that great team with Randy Moss and Dante Culpepper and all the rest. And they got upset by the Atlanta Falcons back in the day. And this year, there were high hopes for the Vikings, finally getting the Norsemen back into the Super Bowl after low so many years. Gosh, I guess almost 40 years. And now Teddy Bridgewater out, which... The NFL, I mean, having a good quarterback is a big part of it. And not to have Teddy Bridgewater, devastating. That's why they basically had to shut down practice after it happened. Evidently, veterans were flinging their helmets and shouting expletives, others on their knees in prayer. So, wish nothing but the best for Teddy Bridgewater in his recovery, for sure. And we'll see what is able to unfold. Meanwhile, Tim Tebow, trying to keep the dream alive, in his baseball career, which is interesting enough as well. Again, you'd have to put his odds somewhere way out there on that. And the controversy continues to swell around Colin Kaepernick. Evidently, someone commenting that, I guess Rodney Harrison commenting, former NFL player and current NBA analyst Harrison, has apologized on Twitter after criticizing Colin Kaepernick and his refusal to stand for the anthem while suggesting that the quarterback is not black and doesn't truly understand racism. Wow, really? Well, at least he apologized. I never intended to offend anyone. I was trying to speak about my experiences as an African American. Okay, well, hopefully they can mend their fences. All right, let's get on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day. We've got a few lined up here. Our first one, and I think most of these we have today center in on crime spanning the globe. How about this bizarre crime report from the Charlotte police files? Evidently, a guy... Let's see, as it says, nailed it. It's usual for people to shoplift by shoving things down their pants, but it's important that one is careful about what they're putting down there. Last week at a Home Depot in East Charlotte, a customer reported seeing someone get gutsy with their stolen goods. The customer told employees he saw a man put a nail gun down the front of his pants and walk out of the store, hopefully, very slowly. We'll give you the other nominee and the winner when we come back from the break. This is The Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show here on this Wednesday, August 31st, T-minus 4 days from Blessed Mother Teresa being raised to the altars throughout the world and canonized as a saint. Now, keep in mind, the Catholic Church does not make saints. The Catholic Church recognizes saints. I guess you could say she makes saints in the sense that she, by God's grace, we, by God's grace, in cooperation with the Holy Spirit, become, through the church being the universal sacrament of salvation, we become mediators of the grace by which someone becomes a saint. And by the way, you know, Mother Teresa, I'm hoping to have on a missionary of charity. I'm hoping to have an interview with her, someone who knew Blessed Mother Teresa personally. And I know Friday, God willing, my friend Chris, who spent some time with Mother Teresa when she came to Kentucky, here where we broadcast from, back in the early 1980s, he got to spend a little bit of time with her. It's good to hear those kind of stories, too, because they sort of lift these saints off the pages of devotional books and holy cards and help us understand that we can't so sanitize the saints that we don't recognize that they take away our excuse of becoming a saint. That's our call. It's to be a saint. No one will be in heaven without being a saint, one who is made perfect in love, and God will not do it without our cooperation. Saints were not born with halos hovering over their heads. They were born into the same rough and tumble world that we live in, faced with many of the same choices. And they simply, by God's grace and persistence, and through their own free choice, consented to allow him to do that hard work in them. So don't, you know, as Dorothy Day once said, and I'm sure comes up time and time again in her own cause for canonization, she once said, "Don't make me a saint. I don't want to be dismissed that easily." Anyway, T-minus 4 days from this great canonization of a Blessed Mother Teresa. What a great day it will be. Get my question of the day here on the birthday of Maria Montessori, whose legacy continues with her name on a number of schools throughout the world that embrace her philosophy of education. So I'm asking a question today, particularly about elementary school teachers. Let's say age kindergarten through fifth grade. Who to you was the most excellent teacher you had either as a student or as a parent? Your best elementary school teacher you've known. Most effective, let's say. 573-4BREAD-4, you can call or text 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post your response on Facebook or on Twitter. Shannon says, "We had a great Montessori teacher for our oldest son for the first 3 years of his schooling life. But in Catholic school, his first and third grade teachers, as well as his librarian, were excellent." And then she talks about her daughter's fourth grade teacher. She says herself, Shannon, the best elementary school teacher she had growing up was her fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Wolbold. "I had some conduct issues related to my ability to be quiet during class," Shannon says. Come on, really, Shannon? She addressed that issue with creativity and a positive approach. "Did it cure me of my penchant?" Doesn't that sound pretentious? Usually I say penchant, but did it cure me of my penchant for chatter? She said, at least for 1 year. Yes. Anyway, back to our What Were You Thinking awards. We've listed one, the guy who decided he would lift a nail gun from the local Home Depot by sticking it down the front of his pants. Let's hope he didn't make a trip to the ER later. Anyway, how about this story? This guy who decided he went into, believe it or not, his last name was Crook. And yes, we're still in the realm of crime here. And the unfortunately named Joshua Crook here in St. Louis, after a gas station clerk manager tried to stop a 33-year-old Joshua Crook from taking a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos, he attempted to light the gas station on fire, according to a police report. Around 5 p.m. Sunday, Crook allegedly tried to take a bag of Cheetos from a display when the manager told him either put it down or pay for it. He then punched the manager in the face. The manager says Crook then went outside and slammed a gas pump on the ground, causing gasoline to pool, then threw a lit cigarette onto the gas. He has been charged with first-degree arson, third-degree assault, theft of less than $500, and first-degree trespassing. You know, Mr. Crook, I'm imagining that if you weigh the cost of a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos versus the fines and the cost of your soon-to-be imprisonment, I'm guessing it wouldn't be a wash. But anyway, even he does not win. We're going to go to another criminal, again, spanning the globe, celebrating human inability to sometimes think wisely, go dumb or go home, as we say. Well, this guy went dumb and probably won't be going home soon. This was in Racine, Wisconsin. There was a burglary at Port of Call Liquors. Evidently, Racine police officers were dispatched on the report of a burglary. When they arrived, they observed two broken glass doors leading into the store, in addition to a gray T-shirt lying in the entranceway. According to the criminal complaint, police observed that the cash register had been taken. When they talked with the owners, they indicated that the cash in the register was about $300. And the register itself valued at $1,000. When police reviewed the security footage, they observed that the gray T-shirt on the ground contained the name Dustin Brannon ironed onto it. They looked up the aforementioned name in their lookup system and found a picture of Brannon, police said. They compared the lookup photo with the port of call's security footage and made the match. Wow. Yeah, wardrobe malfunction of the worst sort for Mr. Brannon. So that's our winner. If you've got one you want to nominate, give us a call or send me an email, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Read this story the other day. I'm pretty actually impressed that it would be on the front page of the abcnews.com website. You remember Kayla Mueller, the young American woman who was taken hostage by ISIS. She was a humanitarian worker in Syria, captured or kidnapped there in Aleppo, I believe, a place where there's been so much violence and heartache lately. According to this abcnews.com story, American hostage Kayla Mueller was tortured, verbally abused, forced into slave labor for ISIS commanders in Syria, and raped by the group's top leader. But her fellow hostages say she never surrendered hope. She selflessly put the welfare of fellow captives above her own, and she even stood up to executioner Jihadi John to defend her Christian faith. That's really a powerful story. Ms. Mueller, who I believe was a Protestant Christian, evangelical Christian, was there and refused to surrender. Former hostage Daniel Rye Ottesen, a Danish freelance photographer, recalled how Mueller turned the tables on her captors. One of the Beatles, that's what they called their four captors, but I guess they talked with the British accents. One of the Beatles started to say, "Oh, this is Kayla, and she has been held all by herself, and she's much stronger than you guys, and she's much smarter. She converted to Islam." And evidently Mueller then said, "No, I didn't." This is from Ottesen, who told ABC News. He said it surprised him a lot. He once tried to strangle himself when ISIS guards strung his arms up by chains. He said, "I would have not had the guts to say that. I don't think so. It was very clear that all of us were impressed by the strength that she showed in front of us. That was very clear." Reminds me of, in a sense, when Paul and Silas in Acts chapter 16 in jail in Philippi, as it says in that passage, in the middle of the night, they are shackled. In those horrible conditions, they were singing songs of praise to God, and the other prisoners were listening. So much so that when the earthquake came and opened up the jail doors, they could have all escaped. They did not. When the jailer ran in with plans to kill himself because he assumed everyone had escaped, St. Paul had convinced them all to remain out of concern for the well-being of the jailer. Of course, it led to the jailer's own baptism and his washing of Paul and Silas's wounds. It's a reminder that when we go through suffering, not only can God give us the grace to stand, I'm not saying that it would be easy by any means. This is why we need supernatural help. But what impact our witness in the midst of suffering has on others. It's also a good reminder to us. You may be on your way to work right now or dealing with a situation, somebody who's very difficult to deal with. You know, there is a spiritual work of mercy that's called bearing wrongs patiently. A little perspective, perhaps, on the wrongs that we've had to endure as opposed to Miss Mueller and the wrongs that she had to endure at the hands of her captors and how she, really by God's grace, was a source of strength. You might even say her life became spiritual food, Eucharistic of sorts for her, the other captives there. So eternal rest grant unto her, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon her and all those who suffer for the faith. We'll be back with more. We'll look back in history, among other things. This is the Mike Allen Show. You're listening to BBM Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour. Get back on the Mike Allen Show here on the 31st of August, 2016. My guest next hour will be Chelsea Zimmerman. As I said, Chelsea holds forth at the blog reflectionsofaparalytic.com. She's also the editor-in-chief at catholiclane.com. We'll be talking about the Paralympics. We'll be talking about false idolization, let's say, as well as some of the condescension that she has to deal with dealing with a disability. So all those things in the next hour. By the way, Alex here running the board has informed me the starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos will be Trevor Siemian. Trevor who, you say? Well, yeah, exactly. The seventh round draft pick out of Northwestern. And he is a rookie, you said, right, Alex? Wow. So his first start against the defending NFC champion Carolina Panthers. Whew. You know, he's probably just going to be a game manager, I would assume, with that Denver defense, if Denver's able to be as dominant, especially with their front four on defense, as they were last year. So maybe he'll be okay in that regard. But tough task indeed. Should be worth watching for sure. Again, 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to chime in on my question of the day on the birthday of the late Maria Montessori. Who is your favorite or who was the best elementary school teacher you've ever encountered, either as a student yourself or as a parent? 573-4BREAD-4. You can call or text, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Let's get into our this day in history. What are some other things that have happened throughout the ages? August 31st, fairly short list today. In the year 12, Caligula was born, the notoriously libertine emperor whose excesses were famous. Of course, there was a film with Malcolm McDowell, I think X-rated, called Caligula back in the day. The only reason I know that was when I was in college. I was on a student bus on the University of Kentucky campus, and I had this guy that I didn't know that well. But I was on the bus with him, and he struck up conversation. And he had a real, real country accent, talked kind of slow. And he said to me, you know, I watched that movie Caligula last night. Meanwhile, everybody on the bus is quiet. He's talking so loudly, everyone can hear. Then he proceeds to describe in explicit detail some of the things that happened in the film. Let's just say I was uncomfortable. Staring straight ahead, please. That's all I know about that film. Anyway, sounds like Forrest Gump. That's all I need to know about that. 1535, Pope Paul II excommunicated King Henry VIII of England. In 130 years ago today, the first major earthquake recorded in the eastern U.S. at Charleston, South Carolina. 110 people died. I guess, you know, most of the country probably sits in areas that could be faced with a big quake at some point. Sort of a ticking clock, huh? Happy birthday to Richard Gere today, who's 67 years old. Rocky Marciano on this day 47 years ago died in a plane crash at the age of 45 years old. Larry Fitzgerald, wide receiver for the Arizona Cardinals, 33 years old today. And Ken Griffey Jr. and Sr. on this day back in 1990, the first father and son to play on the same team. They each went 1-for-4 for the Mariners. And on this day 19 years ago, the death of Princess Diana of Wales in a horrible car crash there in France. Hard to believe 19 years has gone by since that event. Of course, we're coming up on the death of Mother Teresa, whose death at the time was overshadowed in terms of world publicity by the death of Princess Diana. 573-4-BREAD-4. Like I said, if you want to chime in with a comment, 573-4-BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. A couple things. One thing, actually, I meant to get to yesterday, and one we'll get to today. They'll both go together. One, it's a quote and a list that bother me. We'll start with the list. I saw this link somewhere. I'm not sure where it popped up. It's a shame list from an organization called Campus Pride. It's a website, campuspride.org. Titled Building Future Leaders and Safer, More LGBTQ-Friendly Colleges and Universities. And they have this shame list, what they call the absolute worst campuses for LGBTQ youth. And here's a little quote. Religion-based bigotry is careless and life-threatening, said Shane Windmeyer, executive director of Campus Pride. LGBTQ young people face high rates of harassment and violence, especially our trans youth and LGBTQ youth of color. Schools on this list openly discriminate against LGBTQ youth, and many of these schools have requested or received Title IX exemptions for no other purpose than to discriminate, expel, and ban LGBTQ youth from campus. It's shameful and wrong. Then when you start scrolling down the list, basically you begin to see that the universities listed are all, I mean, honestly, without exception, faith-based. And virtually all of them, I think, Christian. And there are, I think, several Catholic universities in there. Let's see who we have in terms of the Catholic realm. Belmont Abbey College, Franciscan University in Steubenville, John Paul the Great Catholic University in Escondido, California. We have also St. Gregory's University in Shawnee, Oklahoma, and the University of Dallas in Irving, Texas. And as I said, we've also got a great number of Baptist schools, other Christian schools. Here, what's the criterion for a school being on the shame list? It appears to simply be if a school rooted in its faith continues to teach what the Christian faith has always taught about the nature of homosexual acts, then it is de facto a bigoted school that's on the shame list. I just want to say, really? I mean, this is where we are? I mean, this does not exactly shed a hopeful light on the possibilities that there will be those in our culture who will respect religious conscience on this issue. Very disturbing. Very troubling. Rather, the idea is to publicly shame organizations and institutions into changing their moral teaching. Again, what is Catholic moral teaching? It's not that homosexual desires or even one's perceived homosexual orientation is sinful. Desires then in themselves are neither here nor there in terms of do not have a moral status per se. I mean, if pursued, they might. But desires themselves, not sinful. Nor does the Catholic Church pretend to understand where homosexual desire or gender identity struggles or whatever come from. The Church is relatively agnostic on that question. Doesn't stake a claim either way. But the Church continues to insist that marriage, by her very nature, involves the union of a man and a woman who, in their bodily, fleshly union, form a single organic reproductive principle. The union of the two that point in their uniting in one flesh, not only to the union of Christ and His Church, but to the communion of love, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, who is the Trinity. It's why human beings made in His image. The Church will never change her teaching on the nature of marriage. Now, to be fair, the Catholic vision also has a particular understanding of sexual chastity and what that means and how sexuality is properly directed. And so it views premarital or extramarital heterosexual sexual acts also to be immoral. But anyway, I just, come on. The shame list. Now, the shame is in your corner, my friend. The other thing that bothered me, that's a list that bothered me, but let me give you a quote that bothered me. This is from the website cupofjoe.com. Now, understand this, the woman, Joanna Goddard, who writes this blog, there's a lot of good stuff on there. I enjoy it from time to time. Written really entirely from a secularist perspective, largely, though she sometimes waxes on about certain Buddhist thoughts or New Age type stuff. But Christianity never finds a place on her blog. Anyway, but she quotes, she's talking about some time that she spent parenting. She calls this little piece Parenting in a Nutshell. And she says that time spent with her children on Coney Island made her think of a quote by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. A mother discovers with great delight that one does not love one's children just because they are one's children, but because of the friendship formed while raising them. I guess the only thing that makes me a little bit nervous about that quote, as long as you keep the word just in there, I guess that's okay. Yes, we should love our children because of the friendship formed while raising them. But we should love our children simply because they are, right? Not just because they're our children either. We should love them just because they are. There's almost, you can get a sense, the danger, I think, of saying that our love for our children comes from the friendship formed while raising them, to say that, well, because I know Mrs. Goddard is pro-choice, for example. Maybe the attitude can be, if I haven't yet formed a friendship, then maybe my child is not someone I'm responsible for. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much. I've done it before. We'll be back with a new hour. This is The Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.